by a long shot. This is our first full week here at Hillcrest while Brian's on sabbatical. You noticed when you came here the building hadn't burned down. It was still standing. I do want you to know, just barely. It has been kind of an interesting week as we have been kind of divvying up some of those responsibilities. I think I'm going to start a paper chain. So this is week one, 11 more to go. But we do trust that Brian is having a great sabbatical, and he needs that break, that kind of reconnection with God and his relationship with God that's not necessarily connected to his work here. It's a challenging. When I took my sabbatical a few years back, it was a big challenge for me, especially the very first Sunday, because you just wanted to be here doing your thing. But he did text me at about 8:38, said, I'm praying for you. And just continue to pray for him and his family as he continues on this sabbatical. A great thing for him and his own refreshment. But today, we're starting a brand new series. So Ruth, Jochebed, Sarah, God. What do those four things have in common? What's that? Ooh, Deb, very good. Deb has seminary education, so she's cheating. They all have feminine characteristics, and they're all a part of what we're doing in this series. Each one of those is a different week we're going to be looking at in this series. And I know that the minute you say, you know, the feminine qualities of God, people hear feminism and all this, like, set that aside for a moment and realize that God in creation said he created men and women in his image. He created them. All that is feminine is also in God. All that is masculine is in God. He is not feminine or masculine, but those qualities are within his being and are displayed through in two different realms in this creation of men and women. And so we're going to talk about that and the feminine qualities of God, since it seems like in church we really major on the masculine side, but that there's a feminine aspect as well that is just as significant and important and includes half of creation is this feminine quality. So that'll be in our last one. But today I want to talk a little bit about a gal named Ruth. She was a daughter-in-law. But before we get into Ruth's story, we're going to have a little fun as we start. And I want to see how well you can do at guessing the parents of some famous, or at least their parents are famous, some daughters, all right? So the first one, kind of a little bit easy for those of you who know some things in pop culture. Okay, so we've got Kate Hudson. Okay, is her mother Meg Ryan, Goldie Hawn, Nicole Kidman, or Heather Locklear? Yeah, you guys knew that one. Goldie Hawn, that's right. You think they look alike? Yeah, I had to get an older picture of Goldie Hawn because she's done some things lately that I'm, as my aunt would say, not too good. How about Nicole Richie? It is her parent Lionel Richie, Kathy Ireland, Cheryl Ladd, or Sheena Easton? Lionel Richie? Hello. Yes, that is correct. It is Lionel Richie. And before you say, oh, I see the family resemblance, she's adopted, okay? So, all right, how about, I want you guys to know that already, these first two, you are way smarter than first service. There's not a seat empty in first service, but the whole of them together couldn't find their way out of a can of beans. So, you guys are doing way better. Oh, I'm sorry, some of you that have moved from first to here, you're in the better service. So, all right, who's the parent of Lily Collins? Is it Gary Collins, Phil Collins, Joan Collins, or Stephen Collins? B? Phil Collins? Really? Yes, Phil Collins. All right, how about this one? Now, the last name, obviously, it's easy who it is, but there's lots of brothers here. So, Ireland Baldwin. This is not Photoshopped. If you don't know this gal, does that not look like a Baldwin? Alex, Stephen, William, or Daniel? Got some A's? No Stevens? Correct answer is yes, Alec Baldwin. All right, last one. I got corrected on my pronunciation, so they can't get them right, but they can correct me on my pronunciation. Lourdes Leon. Melanie Griffith, Sharon Stone, Marie Osmond, Madonna. Yeah, I think you can kind of see that family resemblance. Yep, that's Madonna's kid. Here's what a few dads, pop culture dads, had to say about their daughters. This one here, anything I've done up to May 27, 1999 was kind of an illusion, existing without living. My daughter, the birth of my daughter, gave me life. Johnny Depp said that. This one here, having two daughters changed my perspective on a lot of things, and I definitely have a newfound respect for women. And I think I finally became a good and real man when I had a daughter. Mark Wahlberg said that. And this one here. When I come home, my daughter will run to the door and give me a big hug, and everything that's happened that day just melts away. Hugh Jackman. Who knew that the Wolverine needed a hug, huh? Now, most of you know that I have a daughter. I've also got two boys, but I only have one daughter. And you know what's different between my daughter and my boys? I mean, aside from the obvious, aside from even her personality and her traits versus their skill sets, their personality, and the things that they're interested in. The difference between the two is that she is my only daughter. She's the only one I've got. And a daughter holds a very special place in the heart of a father. A place that is, I believe, God reserves specifically for her. I think about her differently than I think about my boys. There is a level of care and protection that a father has for his daughter that I would say is even primal. And you don't want to get between that. There's a lot of jokes, right, about you know, husbands, you know, future husbands maybe, or boyfriends that come over and the dad's got the, you know, cleaning the shotgun kind of thing. Like, I have never done that, but I'd take anybody out, you know, that mess with her, because like, that's my daughter. There's a special place in the heart of a father for his daughter. And I think a father that denies that relationship, a father that does not hold his daughter to that esteem or that level, not only he loses something in his own life and is missing something significant, but the thing that you need to realize is that also in the daughter, she is losing out on the opportunity to get a glimpse and understanding of God's loving relationship for her. Most girls, their understanding of God later on in life comes from their relationship and their understanding of love from their father. Now, that's right or wrong. That's just the way that is. And so a father that denies that special relationship with his daughter robs her of the ability to understand God in that healthier context of love and sacrifice for her. And so a daughter is a unique gift to a dad and a unique gift to this world. And God has a lot to say about daughters. I mean, throughout the scriptures, it's filled with examples of daughters. And one is in the Old Testament. It's a story that is, in fact, the book itself is titled of her name, and that is Ruth. And so today I want to talk a little bit about Ruth, but I want to tell you her story. Now, last week when Tarina was over here, if you were here last week, she told the story of Ruth and Naomi. And she hit a few of the details. I'm going to hit on a few other things that she talked about. It was a good precursor for what we're talking about today. The story of Ruth happened 3,000 years ago. So this wasn't just like, you know, a little bit ago. She was, this story was taking place. It's 3,000 years ago. And she had a husband, and her husband's name was Elimelech, and his wife's name was Naomi. Now, Naomi and her husband were from a town called Bethlehem. Anybody heard of that place? Now, again, this is 1,000 years before Jesus' birth. Jesus, of course, was born there in Bethlehem. When Jesus was born there, it was a pretty small place. 1,000 years before, probably smaller yet. A really small community. But again, this is a small area in which most of the stories of the scriptures took place. And so they're living there in Bethlehem, and Naomi's got this husband, and all of a sudden they have a couple of boys. So they've got two boys, and this famine breaks out. Now, Bethlehem is in an area called Judea. That's like the region where Bethlehem is located. And they have to escape that region because of the famine. Now, understand this. Their world, their understanding, the way they had to live life, it's not comparable to us today. Because today, like if you go over to Hy-Vee, it doesn't matter what the crops are really doing in South Dakota. It will affect Hy-Vee a little bit. But Hy-Vee is getting food from all over the world shipped in, and there's all these trade agreements and how stuff gets into our country and to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, to 26 and Sycamore Hy-Vee. Back 3,000 years ago, there is nothing like that. Your produce and what you consume is what is available right there in your region. Even if something is shipped in, it's a delicacy. It's not something that can feed an entire population. So when you had a famine, that meant there was like a lack of rain or for whatever, pestilence or something, the crops were no longer producing fruit or vegetation or food, or your livestock were dying off. Whatever the reason was, you were starving as a people. And the only way to escape it was to geographically move to a place that wasn't having that problem. And obviously, if we're moving geographically, that's a long distance. I mean, if we're having a drought in the Midwest, you have to go a long way to get away from that drought. And so they had to go a long ways away. And so they went to a place called Moab, which was not in Colorado. It was in the Middle East. And Moab was this place that they went to escape the famine, and sure enough, there was no famine there, and they were able to eat, and they were able to raise their family. And so they raise up these boys, and these boys eventually get married. Now, they get married, these two boys get married to two women from Moab, and they were Moabites. Big surprise. Because these gals were from there, their families are there, and they have these two girls. Well, sometime along the way here, Naomi's husband dies. So now all that's left for Naomi is these her two boys and then the two Moabite women that married the boys. The two girls are important in the story. One is named Orpah. Now, does that sound like a name that you're familiar with nowadays, Orpah? Oprah. Do you know Oprah, on her birth certificate, her name is Orpah. She was named after this character in the Bible. If you listen to anything of Oprah as she talks about it, she was named Orpah, but apparently where she grew up, nobody could pronounce Orpah, or they just kept messing it up, so they changed it to Oprah. So her real name is Orpah. So, side note. So Orpah is there, and then the other girl is Ruth, which is really the focus of our story today. So Naomi's husband has passed on. Naomi is now being cared for by her two sons. Now again, culturally, realize that a woman back 3,000 years ago could not hold any job that a man would hold. Even though they were fully capable, physically able to do the job, they were not allowed to. In society, a woman had to be cared for by a man. Right or wrong, that's just the way that was in their culture. So that's why you got married, because your husband provided for the family and the kids and the whole thing, and through your life you'd be cared for. If your husband passed away, then your children would take care of you. So these two sons are taking care of Naomi. If the sons were gone, then there would be no one to take care of Naomi except extended family. The problem is that Naomi had moved with her family to Moab, where there was no extended family. They only had what they brought. And so when her husband dies, she only has the two sons. And then there's the daughter-in-laws of these two sons. So the two sons are now supporting mom and their own families. Well, about 10 years down the road, the two sons pass away. The Bible doesn't even tell us what happened to them. It's a kind of a side-by-side thing. Like, all at the same time, both of these boys die. You got to think it's some kind of accident that took place. But now Naomi has no relatives in Moab and no one to take care of her. So a woman has two options. Her first option is to beg, and her second option is prostitution. Not because she wants that, but out of necessity to get income to be able to buy food. That's what women had to do. So you either begged or became a prostitute. So for Naomi, it's super bad. Now, for these Moabite girls, they obviously would have had family there. They could have had someone that would have taken care of them because their parents still were in the Moab area, but Naomi's got nobody. So Naomi says it's time to head back to Bethlehem. It's been many, many years, a decade or more. The famine is past, and so I'm going to move back to Bethlehem. Both Orpah and Ruth say, hey, Naomi, we'll go with you. And Naomi says, don't go with me. You stay here. Marry Moabite men. raise a family, have a life. Orpah says, good idea, and she decides to stay. But Ruth says, I'm going with you. And then Naomi says, I want you to stay. And then Ruth says, I'm going to go with you. And then Naomi says, I'd like you to stay. And then Ruth says, I'm going to go with you. And then Naomi says, I'd like you to stay. And then Ruth says, I'm going to go with you. I'm serious. If you read this text, it's just back and forth. When you're reading it, you just want to scream out and say, well, someone make a decision here. They just go back and forth, back and forth. And finally, Ruth says something that's been recorded in history. And this is repeated time and time again in other areas of our society. People don't know where it comes from, but you'll hear it as I read it. Listen to what Ruth has to say here to her mother-in-law, Naomi. She says, but Ruth replied, don't ask me to leave you and turn back. Wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you live, I will live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Wherever you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord punish me severely if I allow anything but death to separate us. So Ruth really puts the nail in the conversational discourse that's happening here, the exchange back and forth, and says, look, I'm making a commitment to you and before God. I'm not only going back to Bethlehem, I'm sticking with you for the long haul, all the way to death. Only death is going to separate us, and if not, let God punish me. So, I mean, Ruth is making the most ultimate sacrifice to be with Naomi and to care for her. So now Ruth is with Naomi on their way back to Bethlehem, taking care of her along the way, as well as once they get to Bethlehem, the story kind of unfolds that Ruth is out and helping provide. But the cool thing is that Naomi has relatives there in Bethlehem that can help provide for their family. And so along the way, Naomi decides, you know, it's time, Ruth, now that we've been in Bethlehem for a while, it's time for you to get married, you know, because you're still young and like desirable and, you know, you're marryable. And so you get married and you have a family and, you know, I want you to do this. Now, that doesn't break Ruth's vow to Naomi. She said, I will be with you. And she is. She's there in Bethlehem taking care of her. In fact, if Ruth gets married, even more so, she's able to help Naomi and care for Naomi. So Naomi, as most mothers do and mother-in-laws, she hatches a plan. And she hatches a plan because she's got this guy that she wants Ruth to connect with, and his name is Boaz. So the Bible, as you read this, kind of has a difficult thing to kind of wrestle with here. But in this plan, Ruth hooks up with Boaz. And I mean hooks up in a biblical sense. You know what I mean? Like they, you know what I mean, right? Yeah, they become one. Let's put it that way. And in that, they end up getting married. Like Boaz becomes what the scriptures call a kinsman redeemer. And that's a kinsman, a relative, redeems this bad situation the family's in. And so he takes on that role, though he's much older than Ruth, and he marries Ruth to be that kinsman redeemer and to care for her and to care for Naomi. And the story is just beautiful as it unfolds. And Boaz has this to say to Ruth. He says, the Lord bless you, my daughter, Boaz exclaimed. You are showing even more family loyalty now than you did before, for you have not gone after a younger man, whether rich or poor. Now don't worry about a thing, my daughter. I will do what is necessary, for everyone in town knows that you are a virtuous woman. So here's the story of Ruth and what she experienced with Naomi as she cared for Naomi, but yet God provided for Ruth as well in this relationship with Boaz. And eventually the story of Ruth and Boaz, their offspring move all the way to King David, which is going to move all the way to Jesus. So it's a very, very important union between these two and how God used the faithfulness of Ruth to really unfold the story of Jesus himself coming into the world. So you never know how God's going to use these things, but Ruth was honorable to her mother-in-law, Naomi. And I think the story of Ruth, though it is about a daughter, is not just about a daughter or just about women, but it's about all of us as children. It's a story about loving and supporting and caring for our parents. It's about sacrificing. It's about providing. And when we think about our own parents, Maybe for some of you, your parents are really young. Others of you, maybe your parents are aging in some way. Some of you I know here today have parents that are no longer with us. But as you think about in your younger years of caring for your parents, you don't like to think about it. In fact, you know, when you are still living at home, your parents are eternal. Like, they'll always be. And they're also eternally dumb. They'll just never figure it out in your mind. And then as you move out of the house, all of a sudden, you start to realize that your parents had some experience, and though they still will be kind of eternal in your mind, you start to absorb or accept some things that they have known and experienced in their life. Then as you go even further down, you start to realize that your parents had wisdom, and you start to want to soak in as much of that as you can, because you realize that they actually made it to their age, feeding themselves and raising a family. You're trying to raise your family, wondering how in the heck did they do it. It seems so easy when you were growing up with them, but now you have your own family. It is a great challenge. And then as you see your parents start to age and not be able to do all the things for themselves that they used to, and you can see things slowly changing, your mind starts to realize they won't always be with you and that they are going to need care. But even beyond that care, that there will be a day that will come that you will journey into life alone without them. I mean, you have other relationships. I don't mean like ultimately alone, but There's I think, a hole that starts to develop in you well before your parents leave this earth that is a sorrow and a deep loss of these parents that have loved you and cared for you and raised you and been there for you. And so we don't like to always think about these realities that are in front of us, but we are called by God to care for our parents. And I think something that's important for us to hear, because I don't know what all of your experiences were with your parents. Some of you had great experiences. Some of you did not have good experiences, maybe horrific experiences. But the Bible doesn't delineate and say, you know, if your parents were bad to you, you can kick them to the curb. The Bible says no matter what, we're to care for our parents. And our care for our parents was not dependent on how well they cared for you. We're still called to care for them no matter what. In fact, it's a role reversal that starts to take place. Just like your parents had an obligation and a responsibility to care for you as a child, that care that they provided you was not dependent on how you treated them. We have the same obligation as they have. They cared for us, we care for them. In fact, when it comes to this care of our parents, Paul wrote to a pastor named Timothy. And he talked about how the responsibility was first with the church to care for widows, but before even the church would step in, that it's important for the families to step in and care. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 3 through 4, it says, "Take care of any widow who has no one else to care for her." So that's his charge to Timothy as a church. Take care of the widows that don't have anyone to take care of them. He says, "But if she has children or grandchildren, their first responsibility is to show godliness at home and repay their parents by taking care of them." What a fascinating way to look at it. To repay your parents by taking care of them. So that was the charge. And he says, this is something that pleases God. God is pleased when we care for our parents, when we repay back what they have done for us. He goes on to say, "But those who won't care for their relatives, especially those in their own household, will have denied the true faith. And such people are worse than unbelievers." We do not have time this morning to go into what all this condemnation means, but I think you could read between the lines that this is really serious for God. There's a lot of areas in the scripture that he's really serious and says some harsh things. This is one of them. That literally how we care for our parents is highly focused on God as a super bad negative if we are not doing this. We are called, it's our responsibility to care for our parents, no matter what. The church steps in only when a family is not there or willing or able. But the command is for that family to step up. Sometimes a family cannot provide the care that a parent needs. So I'm not saying that a parent being in a nursing home is an example of not caring. That may be the best care possible. You may not be able to do the certain things that your loved one needs in order to be cared for, and so that is necessary. But it's also true that there's a lot of families that ship their parents off into some other space for the sole reason, they'll make other excuses, but in the heart of heart, it's so that they're not inconvenienced. so their lives are not interrupted, so it's not a burden on the family in any way, shape, or form. And these are things I think we have to caution ourselves on as followers of Christ, because our job is to care for them. And if that care is that connection with them, that attention to them, we have to do that. But we shouldn't just be shipping them off for the sake of shipping them off. So that passage in 1 Timothy is a powerful one for us to pay attention to. Ruth honored her mother-in-law and stuck with her, even though it meant that she may not be able to get married, because she was just making a commitment to Naomi. It was only not until Naomi said, I want to release you to get married and to have a family, she was going to stick with Naomi all the way through the end, even knowing that she left Moab to go to Bethlehem, and that's the place that Ruth would have had no family to care for her once Naomi had passed on. So there's a huge risk that she took, but she took it. And she took her role and responsibility seriously, and we, as children of our parents, should do the same. I mean, we all live fast-paced lives, but that cannot be an excuse to ignore one of the greatest responsibilities and privileges that we have, and that's loving our parents by caring for them. So I want to give you this morning just a couple of quick guidelines as to ways that we can love our parents. First thing is to discover what it is that they want. What is it that they need? In some ways, I think, we have to determine as our parents get older, can they live on their own? Is independent living something they're able to do? How can we assist with that independent living in some way? Parents are better off in a retirement community. So no longer in the neighborhood, but in a retirement community where there's other people that are retired that they can build friendships and connections with and have activities together and get on the bus and go down to the casino or whatever it is that they're doing. And have this bonding together, and it enriches their life. If it's something that they enjoy, if it's something that they want. But we have to ask the question, what is it that they want? Sometimes it is something like in-home care. Maybe they do need more help, things that you're not able to do. I mean, if my parents came to the point and they were needing IVs put in, that's just not my skill set. Luckily, I have a wife that could do that, so we could handle a lot more than most families. But there's certain things you may need to bring somebody in for periods of time to help. And maybe your parents are no longer in their home, but they come into your home and they, live with you and do life with you in your home. At least when they're able and when your family is still able to care for them in that way. But some also need nursing care when the care is just way beyond what the family can do. If a parent can't be left alone ever during the day, obviously you still have to go to work and do other things. Nursing care may be what it is, but that's because it's the best thing for the family. But it's finding out what it is that they need, what it is that they want, and doing your best to meet those needs. But secondly, I'd say we need to focus on providing assistance for our parents as they age. First line of assistance is definitely relational. I can remember my grandmother. She lived about a mile and a half from our house, and it didn't matter how many times we went over there or how many times we called on the phone. It was never enough for grandma. But I looked at that as a good thing because it means she liked us. And I loved my grandma. I would ride my bike after school. I would go to grandma's house before I came home many times. Or if I was out playing and I was hungry for something, I would ride my bike a mile and a half to go to grandma's because it didn't matter if it was 5:30 in the evening. She would give me a bowl of ice cream just for me to show up at 6 o'clock dinner at home, and I'd say I'm full. And my mom would get on the phone with my grandma and do the best she could to kind of chew out grandma, but it never worked because grandma said, I don't care. It's my grandson. If he comes at 5:30 and wants ice cream, he gets ice cream. It was a special relationship. I think if we look as our parents get older, or maybe there's distance between us and our parents, if they're calling us more than we're calling them, that's a sign that something's out of step. We've got to take the initiative on this. Visitation, going and seeing them, if they're in a retirement home or nursing care, regular visits. I visit with so many people in nursing homes and even in retirement communities, and they set their week on the visits of family. And when that's not there, there's this huge loss that's there. Not to forget them, because boy, week after week after week can go by, to remember them, to visit, to see them. And I think also helping them get involved, getting them connected with other groups and other people and things that they can do, wee bowling, I don't know, whatever it is, getting them connected with others. The next thing would be financial. I think, certainly there's a relational piece, but there's a financial piece. My grandfather was a financial whiz. And as he got older, he did really foolish things with his money that he thought was financial wizardry. Family had to step in, and he was really mad about that, because he still felt he was capable, but the check register was saying you are not. And the family had to step in. So he didn't want that, but it was necessary for him to be able to have what he needed for his own retirement and to take care of some of those things. It's stepping in. It's paying attention. It's looking at their finances. It's knowing what their financial situation is. It's protecting them against scammers. Older people are not dumb, but they are a target audience for people. I mean, there's scams out there in which a phone call comes and it's a live person and it says it's their grandson. They have the grandson's name, that he's overseas somewhere, that he's in jail. He needs this bail money. It's a rush phone call. Information is given, passed off. And I mean, what's a grandparent supposed to do? Like, this is my only phone call from jail and I'm calling you, grandma, and I need this money. I need $500 sent immediately. I mean, it's not anybody's fault at that point. They're doing the best they can, but it's helping them be aware of scams and things out there, people trying to sucker them in some way and get their money. But also, I think we need to realize that as our parents get older, we need to help financially. And if you think of all the times your parents foot the bill for you, there's a time that that transitions over and you start footing the bill for them. I mean, like when you were 8 and you went to a restaurant, did they say, two checks, please? No, they covered your meal, and you cover theirs, and you help out where you can, and they're on a very fixed income at this point, and they just don't have the resources, and you're in your money-making years. I know you're trying to set aside as well, but it's helping out financially in any way you can. I think there's a physical assistance that's needing. Some of that is just the maintaining of the home, taking a look at things that need done, changing light bulbs when they need to be changed. I mean, I know your parents may be at an age, they can get up on a ladder by themselves, but what if they fall off? I mean, it comes a point where is the risk worth the benefit? And so you just stop by and you take care of those things that are out of their reach or are dangerous for them in some way, and you provide. Taking care of snow removal, taking care of lawn care, doing these kinds of things are important for physical help. Checking the living condition of their home, changing out batteries in smoke detectors, or maybe if they're at a retirement community or a nursing home, check the care of the place. Open up some cupboards. Look in things. Like, dig around. See the cleanliness of the place, the care that's being provided. Very important. You would hate for your parent to have some kind of an accident doing something that they have always done, but something you could have done, and they end up having a freedom-ending event, a broken hip or something along those lines. And then lastly, I'd say, it's paying attention to the assistance they need with their health. Sometimes you need to attend doctor visits. They come back from the doctor, they just cannot communicate what the doctor said. They don't know. They don't know what the right care is. It's time to start scheduling those at a time that you can go, and you go with them, and you help be that care provider. Keeping a list of their medications, knowing what they're taking, how much they're taking, why they're taking certain things. You have to start to be that care provider. The role starts to be a role reversal. I mean, when you were 5, if the doctor had you on meds, they didn't just say, good luck with that. They monitor that. They took and made sure you took what you needed. And sometimes with our parents, we have to step into that role and help and assist in those kinds of ways. Or having power of attorney, being able to make decisions for them as they come closer to the time when they can't make those decisions. It makes it easier for the whole family if someone has that power of attorney, a son or a daughter. And know their end-of-life desires. When it comes down to the end, what do they want? How do they want it? They're tough conversations to have, but you will be thankful to have had that conversation than to not have had it. What is it, what their wishes are? Do they have a living will? What is their desires? God tells both sons and daughters that they are to care for their parents. And when we do that, the Bible says there's a promise that's attached to you being willing to step up and care for your parents as he commands. It's in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 2 through 3. It says, honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise. If you honor your father and mother, things will go well for you, and you will have a long life on the earth. A long life by caring for your parents. It's an interesting promise. So I ask you this morning, how are you doing with your parents? Are you prepared to honor them as they grow older? Maybe you don't have parents anymore. And if you don't, I'm going to ask you the question, how are you doing modeling this for your own children to be able to prepare to take care of you? Now, that's an important role too. Our kids watch how we take care of our parents. They make decisions how they're going to take care of us when we need them. As we model care to our parents, our children see that see that how they can care for us when we need their assistance. Not a one of us wants to be locked away in some facility somewhere, do we? I don't. We want to be loved. We want to be around the family. We want to see the comings and goings and the craziness that happens in a family. Even though we don't understand Twitter and Snapchat and all the things that the kids are talking about, we still want to be there and a part of it and experience this life, this energy, the people that we love, our offspring. And so it's an important role for us as kids. Now, as a parent that's aging, we all will want to do our best to not be a burden to our children. That's the one thing I probably hear the most from older parents, is the kids are trying to help, but the parents keep saying, I don't want to be a burden. I would say if your kids are offering, please allow them to help, because your stubbornness can become a greater burden on them. As they're trying to help and you just keep resisting and resisting. So don't let your stubbornness become a burden to your kids. But as sons and daughters, we need to love and we need to honor and we need to care for aging parents. We need to be willing to give up some of our freedom for something much greater. And that's to care for those that cared for us. And I think Ruth is a prime example of this. That she was willing to sacrifice anything and everything for the love and the care of her mother-in-law, Naomi. God provided for her in her story. And that story is there to instruct us and to encourage us and to trust that God will provide for us and for our parents as well. Let's sing.